Welcome to another edition of Nightmare Fuel, Creeps and Peepers. I'm Dan Cummins, and I'll be sharing another original short story of the fictional horror variety. I highly recommend noise-cancellation headphones for the best experience. Also, I've seen some confusion online about whether or not this series is serialized. It is not. I am aiming to launch a new serialized fictional show by the end of the year, but these Nightmare Fuel stories have been standalone installments thus far. That being said, you will notice little horror world connections between certain stories as we move forward. There may be sequels to some stories down the road, and even multiple episodes about certain characters. I would like to revisit Ezra Calhoun, for example, at some point. Now let's get started. I hope you maybe not necessarily enjoy, but are disturbed by this new nightmare. It's going to be a tough one to stomach for some of you. Time now for the tale of Sometimes the Darkness Wins. Who made you? Darlene stood in her son's room, holding the bizarre little doll in her hands. She'd never seen another one quite like it. It was clearly made by hand and not mass-produced. This, whatever this was someone's custom creation. And while she definitely did not like it, and greatly wished her 10-year-old son Jack would grow bored with it and move on to something else so she could throw it in the trash and never ever have to see it again, she had to admit that whoever made it was extremely talented. While she wouldn't describe it as a large doll, it certainly wasn't small either. If you carry this thing around in public, which Jack had certainly sometimes done, people would notice and wonder why on earth you would ever want such a thing. Roughly 18 inches long, it weighed probably around 5 pounds. The strange doll's female face, Sam's face, since that is what Jack insisted her name was almost elven? Fairy-like? She was actually rather beautiful, just in a dark, eerie kind of way. Her head and face seemed to have been molded out of some kind of clay, and her painted-on skin and facial features were incredibly lifelike. Too lifelike, really. She definitely gave off Uncanny Valley vibes. Sam's amber, oversized eyes with their long lashes, combined with her expression that included slightly furrowed brows, made for a look that was a bit sad, really. Sad in a deep, world-weary kind of way. Her bright red lips were pursed in what was neither a smile nor a frown. Her expression read as contemplative, perhaps? Judgmental? There was a lot about her that was hard to pin down. For example, curiously, Sam appeared simultaneously both youthful and ancient. She was dressed not in anything contemporary, but rather like some sort of sorceress. Draped in a pale pink mesh dress with black lace over the top in places, kind of like a corset, with more black fabric underneath in certain areas of the dress, Sam looked a bit medieval. Adding to that look, she wore a big dark purple gemstone on her waist where a belt buckle would rest, giving her a fantastical otherworldly appearance. A set of black horns with touches of gold flecks protruded from each side of her forehead near her hairline, rising high above her thick, red, wavy, all-too-human-looking locks in a curved shape, reminiscent of Angelina Jolie in that Disney movie. What was it? Malevolent? Maleficent? Something like that. And then there was the centerpiece of her outfit, a gothic-looking choker necklace. Something about it spooked Darlene, even though it wasn't inherently scary-looking. A small, circular gold pendant hung down from a black satin band above the center of her flat, boyish chest. And in the middle of it was some symbol made from what Darlene judged to be onyx. The symbol looked like a letter or a word written in a language Darlene was unfamiliar with. Almost like a hieroglyphic. A rune, maybe. That's the word that came to mind, even though she couldn't remember exactly what a rune even was. Darlene rotated the little doll around, examining more details. The craftsmanship was amazing. Such fine detail and artistry. Darlene briefly considered taking a picture of Sam and doing an image search to try and find out if she was some super expensive collectible. But if she was worth a lot of money, why on earth would whoever lived here before them just have left her lying on a closet shelf? Also, even if she was valuable, it's not like Darlene could sell her in good conscience. Jack would be devastated. Which was so odd. Why did her little boy want to play with this doll? Of all the dolls, action figures, sure, but this? So strange and girlish? And look, it's not like Darlene cared at all about traditional gender role nonsense. Blue colors for boys, pink for girls, boys get soldiers and girls have tea parties kind of crap. It wasn't that her boy was playing with what looked to her to be a girl's doll that bothered her. It was just that Jack had never expressed any interest in playing with a doll like this ever before. And after playing with this doll for the past few months since moving in, he had shown zero interest in getting any other dolls like her. So why this one? Why Sam? What was it about her? Darlene hated her. The way she looked, the way her son had become so attached to her, the way her son insisted she refer to her by name, everything. Sometimes Darlene felt a powerful urge to throw Sam away, but again, Jack would be devastated. And hadn't life already devastated him enough recently? They'd all been through hell. She felt like she should be overjoyed that the creepy little doll made her son, who had been so sad, so happy. But she wasn't. Darlene carefully set the toy back where she found it, atop her son's desk. She paused to take one more look at her before shaking her head and turning to leave the room to go prepare a little after-school snack for Jack and then wait for him down the street at his bus stop. He'd be getting dropped off in less than 10 minutes now. As she walked out of her son's bedroom, Darlene was oblivious to what would have made her grab the doll and get rid of it immediately, had she happened to have seen it with her own eyes. Sam clearly watched her leave, her lifelike eyes tracking Darlene, head tilting ever so slightly to follow her out, her brows furrowing a bit further and her amber eyes darkening a few shades. Sam no longer looked sad. She looked determined, demented, vicious, venomous, like a deadly snake about to strike. Darlene, her son Jack, and her 16-year-old daughter Abby sat around the dinner table, not really enjoying another tense meal together. Her two kids had been going at it almost nonstop ever since Ben had died. And in recent weeks, it had gotten a lot worse. While she was still not ready to burn Sam, she wouldn't put that past her daughter, who hated the doll even more than she did. "How often do you make out with your creepy little girlfriend, dork?" "Shut up!" "Abby, stop." "Oh, come on, Mom. I know you think that little monster is sus, too." "Sam, her name is Sam, and she's not a monster. You're a monster." "She is a monster, a creepy little monster, dork. And I'm not going to pretend that that Tim Burton abortion is a real person with a name. Abby, leave him alone." Abby and Jack now silently glared at one another from across the table. And although Abby didn't detect the ever so slight change in her expression and the slight darkening of her eyes, Sam glared at Abby as well. She sat atop the table behind a plate and glass next to Jack and directly across from Abby, who sat to the side of her mom. "Fine, whatever. Maybe I'll go get a doll too. It can also sit at the table with us. Like, that's totally normal and add to the creep factor. We can be just like the Addams Family. Me and my sad, fake little friend can just be vibing together all the time, just like Jack and his girlfriend." "She's not my girlfriend, Abby. She's my friend." "Please, Abby, don't make me take your phone away for the night again. Seriously, just quit. I'm sick of hearing you two yell at each other." "Fine. Can I be excused and walk over to Jenna's?" "Yes. Just put your plate in the sink and be back by 9, okay? And this is just Jenna you're hanging out with, right?" "Yeah, just Jenna and me. And these really cool 40-year-old guys we met at the park who said they wanted to teach us how to make love." "Of course, it's just us, Mom. Be back by 9. Abby stood up, kissed her annoyed but also slightly amused mother on the top of her head, walked her plate into the kitchen, and then, firing one final parting shot before she walked out the door, pointed at Sam while Jack watched her and Darlene couldn't see, and mimed a throat-slitting motion. The rest of the dinner between Darlene and her son was pretty silent. Jack was near tears. Abby had been teasing him relentlessly about Sam for months, and he was beyond over it. What did she care what or who he played with? Why did she care if Sam sat at the table for dinner? Abby had her own seat. It's not like Sam was taking it. And it's not like Sam was taking any food or anything else from her either. And Sam was so quiet, she didn't bother anyone. Jack wished that Sam would just agree to talk to Abby and his mom, tell them the truth about who she was. But Sam had told him over and over that other people wouldn't understand if they heard her talking, that they might hurt her or even kill her if they found out she was alive. So she and Jack had agreed that they'd only talk to each other when no one else was around, and that Jack wouldn't tell anyone. For now. Sam said that in time, probably soon, Jack wouldn't have to keep Sam's realness a secret any longer. Jack couldn't wait to tell everybody. Everyone was going to be so jealous. Sam was so cool. He felt so lucky that she'd picked him. That had to mean that he was cool as well, right? Jack saw her for the first time just a few days after they moved in. He told his mom and Abby that he found her on the back corner of a shelf in his closet. That's what Sam had told him to say. But it wasn't true. Sam approached him after everyone had gone to bed for the night. He was crying, again, really missing his dad. In between muffled sobs, he heard a voice in the darkness from across his room. "Jack, are you okay? What's wrong?" At first, naturally, he was a little scared, especially when he couldn't see who was talking. When he scanned around his room, he saw her, standing near his nightlight. "Please, don't hurt me," she pleaded. Jack thought he was dreaming. "Don't come any closer," he nearly shouted.
"Jack, not so loud. If your mom or sister hear us and come in, they'll hurt me, and we can never be friends. I just want to be your friend, Jack."
Jack felt like he should be terrified, but he wasn't. He was confused, a bit in disbelief, but not scared, even though he was talking to a doll.
"Why would anyone want to hurt you?" he asked. "People fear the things they don't understand, Jack," she whispered back. "And they hurt the things they fear."
What are you?" Jack asked as Sam remained standing by the nightlight.
"In my world, I guess I'd be something like a sorceress. But here I appear to others as a child's doll."
Jack couldn't believe what was happening. He still felt a bit like he must be dreaming. "Why did you leave your world? Being a sorceress sounds better than being a doll."
"I was lonely."
Jack began to feel sorry for her. Sam spoke again.
"I love children, and we don't have many children in my world. So sometimes I like to come here, find kids who are sad, and make them happy again."
She now cautiously started to step forward and approach Jack, who remained unafraid. He didn't even consider screaming.
"Why were you crying?" she asked.
And Jack told her. He started to talk about his father, and that was how his strange friendship with a living doll began. And this friendship had been wonderful. Sam was better than any friend Jack had ever had. Not that he'd ever had that many friends. Sam was fun. She could be so funny, or she could stay quiet and be a great listener. She was always down for whatever. Play any game, talk about any subject. She knew so much. Sam was smarter than anyone he had ever known, even counting grown-ups. She'd been helping him with his math homework lately. It had felt like it was going to be impossible to ever figure out how to multiply and divide fractions, but Sam helped him understand it better than his teacher, in just one night. She was also helping him figure out how to talk to Chloe, a girl he'd liked ever since meeting her on the playground, the first day he started going to his new school. Jack had only met Sam a few weeks before he began fifth grade, at a new school where he knew no one. He and his family had moved over the summer because his mom said there were just too many memories in their old house, ever since his dad had died. Cancer. Jack was still mad at his dad, Ben, for dying. He'd promised him that he was going to get better, that he was going to fight and keep fighting and never stop, that he wasn't going to ever let cancer beat him. And if he had done that, he'd still be here to throw a baseball around and teach him how to shave, how to talk to girls, how to ride a dirt bike and shoot a gun, and do so many other cool things. His dad was his best friend, his favorite person in the whole world. But he'd lied. He wasn't going to do any of that now. He gave up, and the cancer did beat him, and he died. And Jack never even got to say goodbye. Jack talked to Sam a lot about his dad. She quickly became his favorite person to talk to about everything. She always made him feel better. She told him that his father was in a better place now, and Jack believed her, because Sam knew things about his dad that he didn't even remember telling her. She was magical. She really was a sorceress, truly. Sam told him he'd see his dad again someday. And that made him so happy. But he was still mad, too. Because what if someday was a long ways away? He wanted to see him today. Maybe if his dad was still alive, Sam would let Jack tell him about how real she was. He'd probably understand better than any other grown-up. He was just cool like that. Just like Sam, Jack's dad knew lots of stories. Stories about other worlds and other creatures and heroes and monsters and all sorts of stuff. Someday, Jack believed his mom and sister would get to hear Sam's stories too. And then they'd understand why he loved her so much. Why he'd never stopped playing with her.
and Abby would apologize for ever teasing him. A few hours after Abby had brought Jack to tears at dinner, Jack was lying in bed, quietly talking with Sam, with the lights off. His mom was still up, watching TV in the living room by the sounds of it, and Abby was back from Jenna's, doing something in her room.
"It makes me mad how Abby treats you, Jack. It's not nice."
"I know, Sam. I hate how she talks about you, too. I wish you could just talk to her."
"I would, Jack, but I'm scared. She'd hurt me. I know she would."
"I don't think so," Jack argued. "I know she can be such a jerk sometimes, but she's really not that bad. She's only been like this since Dad died. She was never that way before. I think she's just sad. She misses him. And that makes her mean, I guess."
"I would love to say that you're right, Jack. I want nothing more than to make you happy. But I don't think you..."
Sam paused contemplatively before finishing.
"Never mind. I shouldn't say."
"What?"
"Shouldn't say what, Sam?" "I don't want to upset you."
Jack was dying to know what Sam had almost said. They talked for hours and hours every week for months now. And she'd never done this before. She'd never started to tell him something and then pulled back.
"What is it, Sam? I want to know."
"I don't think you do, Jack."
"Yes, I do. Come on. We always talk about everything. Please, no secrets. We said no secrets. Please, tell me."
"Okay, Jack. But please don't be mad at me."
"I won't. I promise, Sam."
"All right. Abby isn't as good as you think she is, Jack. Sometimes in her room at night, she says things. Horrible things. I only know because one night, the first time I heard it, I was walking down the hall, dreaming of the day I wouldn't have to hide anymore from your mom and sister. When I heard her talking, so I listened at the door."
"What did she say?"
"She said..." "No, Jack, it really is too much. I can't tell you."
"Sam, please, you have to, whatever it is."
"You'll be mad at me for sharing bad news."
"I won't, Sam, I promise I won't."
"Jack, she said that she wished that you had died instead of your father. She said that she hates you."
Jack laid quietly in stunned silence. He felt like he'd been punched in the stomach.
I told you I shouldn't have said, Jack. You're mad at me now. I'm sorry."
Jack wanted to respond, but he was fighting back a sob.
"This is not about you, Jack," Sam added. "Some people are just, well, they're bad people. I'm so sorry that your sister is one of them."
The little doll then gently, lovingly laid its head on Jack's chest and began to soothingly rub his shoulder, seeming to sweetly comfort him as Jack hugged her and cried. If only Jack in the darkness could have seen Sam's devilish smile as she did so. If only he could have seen how happy his pain was making her. Then maybe everything could have turned out so very differently. After waking up and thinking about what Sam had told him about Abby, Jack snapped a bit in the middle of a tense breakfast the following morning.
"Jack, what's wrong, honey? You're clearly upset."
"Nothing, I'm fine," Jack spat as he scowled at his sister.
"If looks could kill, dork,"
Abby said in response, setting a bite of scrambled eggs back down on her plate next to what was left of a waffle.
"Why the hell are you death glaring at me?"
Jack finished his own bite, still staring daggers at his sister before responding.
"Death glare? You're the one who wants somebody dead."
Abby shook her head and threw up her hands in frustration.
"Mom, we need to take him to a therapist. I keep telling you he's crazy. Abby, how many..."
"No, I'm not! I just don't like having a sister that wants me dead. I hate you, Abby."
"Jack, that is not okay. Apologize to your sister."
"No, she wishes that I would have died instead of Dad."
"What? I've never said that."
Abby now stared at her mom with wide, what in God's name is happening eyes.
"Jack," Darlene roared. "What's gotten into you? Why would you say that?"
Abby and Darlene, both utterly confused and shocked, stared at Jack and waited for a response. Tears were welling up in his eyes. Eyes that were fixated on Sam.
"Why are you looking at her, Jack?" Abby snapped. "She's not real."
A look of incredulous recognition then flashed across her face.
"Wait, do you think that she told you that I said that?"
Jack looked back and forth between Abby and his doll. Darlene, more concern than anger in her voice, now said to her son,
"Honey, you're scaring me. Maybe you and I should talk to someone again. About Dad. And about Sam as well."
A tear rolled down one cheek as Jack looked at his mother and then his sister before returning his gaze to the doll.
Please, Sam. Please just tell Mom what you told me. She'll understand.
Oh my God! For fuck's sake, Abby exclaimed as she stood up. Language, Abby! Darlene snapped, even though she was currently far more worried about her son's mental health than her daughter's use of profanity. Abby sped around the end of the table and grabbed Sam before Jack could stop her. Then she ran over to the front door with the doll and threw her out into the driveway. No! Jack screamed as he pushed his older sister to the side with all his strength and ran out to grab Sam before Abby could do anything else. We need to burn that thing, Abby yelled towards her mom, who internally did not disagree. She'd never seen her son act like he did this morning. She'd heard Jack talking to his doll in his room and even heard him use a different voice to talk back. That was pretty normal. She did the same sort of thing when she was a kid. But she'd never, not at 10, actually thought a doll was real and telling her things, and terrible things at that. Jack picked up Sam and quickly inspected her for damage. Miraculously, she seemed unharmed. He screamed at his sister, "If you touch her again, I'll fucking kill you!" Jack, Darlene yelled at her son as he stormed back into the house. She and Abby each stepped aside to give him room to easily walk past. Darlene didn't want her son to think he could just threaten his sister like that, but also she wanted to give him some time to calm down. Now did not seem like the right moment to address this. Abby looked scared. Darlene couldn't remember her ever looking scared of her brother before. Abby was scared, the way her brother looked at her when he screamed at her. It made what he said not feel like a hollow sibling threat. It felt real, like he really would try to hurt her, even kill her. She was pretty sure that was the first time she'd ever heard him say fuck as well. It was the first time he'd ever said it. She grew more scared when he walked by. She'd tell her mom later that the creepy little doll turned its head towards her when Jack carried her by and that Sam smiled at her. Her mom will tell her that she must have just imagined that happening. Easy to do during such an emotionally heightened moment that revolved around the doll. But Sam couldn't actually do that. If only Darlene was right about that. If only Sam couldn't actually do so much of what she would do. Before we find out what Sam can do, it's time for our mid-show sponsor break. If you don't want to hear these ads, please become a Robert or Annabelle on the Scared to Death Patreon and get these Nightmare Fuel stories and all other Scared to Death episodes ad-free and more. What is the most basic gift you have ever given the moms in your life for Mother's Day? Flowers? A candle? Some random knickknack you picked up at the last minute because you completely spaced Mother's Day?
I have definitely made the mistake of procrastinating gifts for Mother's Day, and then, like the Friday before, I run to whatever store is open and convince myself that, yes, my mom does need another coffee mug that declares she's the world's best. So lame.
This year, how about one upping yourself by giving the moms in your life an Aura picture frame? Named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter, Aura frames are guaranteed to bring joy to any mom at any age. Aura frames connect easily to Wi-Fi and have unlimited storage, so you can share as many pictures as you want.
This year, as many of you know, I am on a spending freeze, but one of my carve-outs was meaningful gifts for the people I love. I don't want to give all of the moms in our lives something that won't bring them joy. We are giving Aura frames to the moms in our world because they are timeless, heartwarming gifts.
Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off, plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code SCARED at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. What are the things that weigh you down on a day-to-day basis? What kind of stress are you holding on to? Do you spend much of your day going over things in your brain over and over until they are so distracting it affects your mental health? Well, don't worry. You're not alone.
We all carry different stressors, some big, some small. When we keep things bottled up, the results can be negative. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest without fear or judgment. It's a place to work through what is heavy on your mind and heart so that you can feel lighter and happier.
I'm always holding on to something. It's the way my anxious brain works. I'm continually worried that I've done something wrong, that I've hurt the feelings of someone I love, and that I have let someone down. I'm stressed that I'm not being a good enough mom or wife. I panic that our life will implode at any given moment and it'll all be my fault. Thankfully, I have an amazing therapist who helps me talk through each of these scenarios. After each and every appointment, I feel lighter, happier, and more capable of showing up as my most authentic self.
Get it off your chest with BetterHelp.
Visit BetterHelp.com/scaredtodeath today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/scaredtodeath.
Summer is just around the corner. Who's excited? I know I am. With the warmer, sunnier days calling your name, the last place you're going to want to be is in your kitchen, cooking and meal prepping. Make your life easier with Factor's no prep, no mess meals.
Factor's never frozen, always fresh meals are dietitian approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Think of all the extra time you will get outside in the summer sun when you aren't wasting hours in the kitchen.
I think I speak for everyone when I say that the summer is the busiest time of the year. We are all trying to cram in as many things as possible, from concerts to vacations and everything in between. With Kyler home from college and Monroe on her break too, I want to spend as much time as possible with them. And while I truly love to cook, the summer is the one time of year that I'm the least interested in doing that for 3 meals a day. So I lean on Factor to help keep me healthy and in step with my diet. I'm obsessed with the honey yogurt pancakes for breakfast, the pork al pastor for lunch, and the cilantro lime barramundi for dinner. So easy and saves me so much time.
Head to factormeals.com/scaredtodeath50 and use code scaredtodeath50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month. That's code scaredtodeath50 at factormeals.com/scaredtodeath50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. Thank you for not leaving. Now back to Darlene dealing with the aftermath of her son and daughter's fight over Sam, the doll that clearly isn't just a doll. Darlene let Jack skip school that day. Luckily, she'd been able to work from home ever since the pandemic. That flexibility had been so helpful. It was nice not to have any coworkers witness her breaking down and crying several times a day, the first 2 or 3 months after Ben had passed. It was nice towards the end of his life when it allowed her to not only work and keep their insurance going, but also act as his nurse and spend as many minutes with him as she could before he left them. And now, it was nice to be able to not have to send her doll-obsessed and suddenly rage-filled son to school where he would for sure break down in front of the other kids and get picked on even more than he already was. "Pretty pissed at you today," she spoke aloud in the living room that night to the ghost of her dead husband after both kids had gone to bed. It had been such an uncomfortable evening. She'd let Jack eat in his room with Sam like he'd asked so he could avoid Abby. And then while she now didn't have to watch her children fight at the table, she'd instead been berated by her daughter for not putting her foot down with Jack. Abby wanted her to get rid of the doll and force him back into therapy. Both Jack and Abby had gone to bed angry. And now she was angry too. She'd been trying so hard to keep her shit together for her kids. It felt like with both of them so constantly upset in their own ways, going back to before Ben had died, back to when he'd first gotten really, really sick, that she'd never had any time to just fall apart herself, which was what she so desperately needed. Darlene quietly spoke to the air around her again before taking another sip of her vodka tonic. "When Jack was 9 and Abby was 15? Really, asshole? You picked one hell of a time to die. You always said you were worried about living with 2 teenagers. Guess you really dodged a bullet, huh?" Sometimes talking to Ben like he was still there made her feel a tiny bit better. But tonight... tonight it just made her feel that much more sad and alone. "I can't do this, Ben. Not alone. God damn it, it's so fucking hard. The kids want to kill each other more and more every day, and I think Jack might be losing his..." Darlene screamed when her soliloquy was disturbingly interrupted. She thought she saw Sam peeking out at her from beneath a chair in the dining room. And then, after locking eyes for just a moment with the creepy little thing, she saw Sam retreat further back underneath the table and then heard the click-clack, click-clack of her hard plastic shoes scurrying across the kitchen, down the hallway, and towards Jack's room. It took everything she had not to keep screaming. After barely composing herself, she muted the TV to be able to hear what was happening around her better and began to walk towards the hallway when... Darlene screamed again when Abby popped around the corner and into the living room. And then Darlene's scream caused Abby to scream a bit herself. Quickly recovering, she asked her mom, "What the hell? What happened?" Darlene almost told her daughter about what she thought she'd seen, but before she spoke, decided against it. Realizing that Sam the doll would certainly be spending her last night on Earth if Abby heard her mom had supposedly seen the doll spying on her and then heard it scurrying away, especially after Abby had told her she also thought she saw the doll look at her,
Darlene was still not ready to deal with what getting rid of Sam would do to Jack. Instead, she immediately tried to convince herself that she hadn't seen what she'd just seen, and neither had Abby. Also, she decided to make an effort to get her daughter to be nicer to that creepy little shit, just in case they had seen something. But that was impossible, right?
"Sorry," she said to Abby. I thought I saw something in the corner of my eye. It was nothing. I've been reading this horror book, and it got me a little more worked up than I realized, I guess."
Abby stared at her mom suspiciously. "Okay. Don't remember you literally ever reading any horror books, but whatever." Abby glanced around the living room, where exactly zero novels could be seen. Darlene, knowing her lie was not a great one, tried to change the subject.
"Hey, now that you're out here, I am begging you to please, please, please go easier on Jack. Don't do it for him. Do it for me. I know you're both still struggling about Dad, and I am too. I can't take a lot more, Abs. I really can't. Please."
Abby couldn't remember the last time her mom called her Abs. It was a nickname her dad had given her, and when he died, her mom had stopped calling her that. Like it was too painful, because it reminded them both of what they'd lost. Abby had been so caught up in her own grief, it was hard to create room for anyone else's. But now, in this moment, she really looked at her mom in a way she hadn't in a long while. She saw the bags under her slightly bloodshot eyes, the hurt in them. She saw how haggard her mom was looking, how much she'd aged in the past year. And for a moment, she stopped feeling sorry for herself and thought about how much pain her mom was in, and relented.
"Sorry, Mom. I'll work on it."
"No cap?" Abby let out a little laugh. "You know you sound pathetic, trying to talk like you're my age, right?"
"I know. I know it makes you laugh, too. I miss that laugh. And thank you."
"And you're sure you're all right out here?"
"I'm fine, Abs."
"Okay. Good night, Mom. Love you."
"Love you too, Abs."
Before her daughter retreated back into her room, Darlene stopped her.
"Abs, one more thing. I know you hate that doll, and I do too. But if you just have to irritate your brother, tease him about anything but the doll, okay?"
Abby looked at her mom quizzically.
"You afraid of Sam, Mom?"
Darlene spoke too quickly, betraying her attempt to convince Abby that she was not scared.
"No, no, I was thinking that maybe he'll get tired of her and move on to something else more quickly if we both just ignore her. You know he can be stubborn. Teasing him about it all the time will probably just push him to play with her that much longer."
"Okay. I'll really try and not mention her anymore. Promise. No cap. Good night, Mom."
"Good night, Abs."
Darlene watched her daughter make it to her room and heard her lock the door. And then as slowly and quietly as possible, she crept down the hall towards her son's room and stopped and listened just outside his door. All she heard from inside was the sound of him sleeping. She was surprised her two screams and then Abby's scream hadn't woken him up. What she couldn't hear was Sam sitting on the edge of Jack's bed, facing the door, with a look of pure evil and malice on her face. She exuded nothing but hatred and barely contained murderous rage. Sam wanted to hurt Darlene so badly. She wanted to hurt them all. But not yet. It wasn't quite time. But soon, soon, if everything went to plan, they'd all feel so, so much more pain. And Sam would feed on it, feed until her belly was full, and that pain would sustain her until the next time she decided to hunt, to hurt, really hurt, came along. Jack slept soundly beside her. His slumber, unbeknownst to him or anyone else but Sam, was unnatural. It was aided by Sam's dark magic to make sure he didn't awake at night and find her missing, maybe hear the wrong thing, and spoil her sick little game. The next few weeks passed by uneventfully. At least for Darlene and Abby, they did. Abby did a great job of avoiding teasing Jack. She barely even called him a dork, maybe only once or twice a day. And she almost never said anything about Sam. Within just a few days of Jack and Abby's big fight at breakfast, Jack was no longer sullenly and silently death-glaring at his sister from across the table every meal. He was warming up to her again. He'd started to soften and seem more and more like his old self. He was laughing. He was giving his mom unprompted hugs and fist-bumping his sister. And then best of all, he started to leave Sam in his room for some of his meals and he no longer wanted to take her outside the house. It seemed like he was beginning to outgrow her. Darlene couldn't be happier. She hadn't seen or heard anything strange since the night she thought she saw Sam under the table, and had now thoroughly convinced herself that she truly had just imagined that, and that Abby had imagined what she thought she saw. She didn't even think about it anymore. It felt like she and the kids might finally be moving on to some new normal that wasn't the three of them constantly soaking in some stew made of almost nothing but sorrow and longing. But this new normal was a lie. Jack was not outgrowing Sam. He was closer to her than ever. He was not having more fun with his sister all of a sudden, and he didn't actually want to be more affectionate with his mother. He was acting. And according to his acting coach, Sam, he was doing a wonderful job. In Jack's room, life had been very, very eventful since the fight with Abby. A lot had been happening. A lot of planning had been going on. Sam had been continuing to poison Jack's mind against his sister and mother. She had fully convinced Jack that Abby absolutely hated him, despised him, that she did wish he was dead, and that she was only being nice to him because her mom had asked her to. And Sam had convinced Jack that his mom was even worse than his sister. She convinced him that his father, Ben, was getting better, that he was recovering shortly before he died, he was going to beat the cancer just like he'd promised, but then his mother started to interfere with his treatment. Why? The reason was so selfish and disgusting. She was a monster. She'd met someone else. Yes, Jack's pathetic excuse for a mother had met someone else when she thought Ben was dying, when she'd selfishly grown sick of taking care of him, and she'd fallen in love with this man she'd started to have an affair with. And when Ben began to recover, she wasn't happy. She wasn't overjoyed that her children's father would be sticking around so he could watch them grow up. She didn't care at all about what was best for her kids. She wanted what was best for her. And she thought about how much happier she would be if Ben just died. And when it became clear that that wasn't going to happen without some help, she helped. She killed him. She put poison in his IV bags. She weakened his immune system. She made him so sick and weak he couldn't fight the cancer anymore. And it killed him. None of that was true. Darlene hadn't met anyone before or after Ben had died. But Sam was very convincing. This was far from the first time she'd run this nightmarish con. She'd spent months building little Jack's trust. She'd learned so much about his mother, sister, and most importantly, about his father. And she was able to use all that knowledge and trust to fuel Jack's powerful grief and hurt and turn it against him. And my, how his hurt had fueled her. This was the reason she played this game. Jack's grief had fed her, just like Darlene's and Abby's had. That was the real reason she snuck around at night, to feed, to get close to their pain, to smell it, taste it, digest it. And the more she fed, the stronger she became. And now she was strong enough to finish their little game. While her magic didn't work as well in this world as it did in her own, she was still able to slightly hypnotize Jack, to make his young, impressionable mind even more open to her horrible suggestions than it already was. She was able to push him into doing something unspeakable. She made it seem like it was a good thing to do, the only thing that would ever make him happy again, the only way he would be reunited with his father. Tonight was the night. The night Sam's game was either won or lost. Jack and Sam laid side by side in his bed. It was close to midnight. Abby had finished Snapchatting with her friends and rizzing with some guy she'd met at her high school's most recent football game and fallen asleep almost an hour ago. His mom had fallen asleep around the same time after watching an episode or two of whatever mindless comedy she'd been binging in the living room and having a few nightcaps, her new nightly ritual.
Will my dad look like I remember him in your world, Sam?
Yes, Jack.
And he'll be so happy to see me. He misses me just as much as I miss him?
Of course, Jack.
I can't wait. I'm ready, Sam. Should we sneak out now?
I think maybe we should rethink things.
What? No. No, you said tonight was the night, Sam. You promised.
I know, Jack, but
I was thinking more about it, and I don't think we can make it far enough before they find us. And if they catch us, they'll take me away. And if I don't get home before sunlight, I can never go back. And I'll die here, Jack.
Sam, no, we'll make it. I know we will. You said the doorway was in the woods right outside of town. We can do it.
Not with them looking for us, Jack. But there is another way. A way we can for sure make it. But you'd need to do something. Something hard. Something I don't want you to ever have to do, and I won't let you do it.
Sam, I'll do anything to see my dad again. You know that. All I want is to live with him in your world.
Not this, Jack. It's too much.
Please, Sam, please, just tell me and let me decide.
Okay. But I don't even like saying it, Jack. The only way to make sure that your sister and your mother don't come looking for us, or tell anyone else to look for us, is to make sure that they never tell anyone anything ever again.
Jack took a few seconds, he was only 10 after all, to read between the lines and understand what Sam had really just told him.
Dead? Dead, right? Is that what you're saying? That if they were dead, they could never find us?
Yes, Jack, that's right. Dead.
I told you it was too much.
Jack and Sam sat in silence for a few minutes, and then Sam started to get up.
I'll miss you, Jack, she said as she brushed his bangs off of his forehead. You're the sweetest boy I've ever met. I'll tell your dad hello for you. He'll understand why you couldn't come.
Sam kissed his cheek and crawled across the bed. She let herself down onto the floor and started to walk towards the door. Jack couldn't see the evil little grin plastered across her self-satisfied face. She knew what he was about to say before he knew he was going to say it.
Wait, Sam, wait. I'll do it, but you have to help me.
Sam had manipulated Jack so deeply, he'd come to truly believe his mother had murdered his father, and that his sister would kill him without a second thought if she believed she could get away with it. And she had charmed him with some of her magic to make these thoughts seem more reasonable than they ever should have. Also, thanks to her sorcery, Jack's life had begun to feel especially like a dream or a movie. Like he wouldn't really be killing his family. He'd just be daydreaming about it, imagining it. Sam's twisted magic had created a sense of surrealness over these past few months. Life had begun to feel more and more like a dream every day. It now felt totally normal to have a talking doll for your best friend. It felt possible to live with your dead father again in another world. And it felt reasonable that your mother and sister would have to die in order to make sure you could begin to live a new, happily ever after life. And all that was what led to the moment in Jack's room when a 10-year-old boy and his doll planned the murder of his 16-year-old sister and 45-year-old mother. Sam held a butcher knife that was almost as big as she was, in her petite hands that were much, much stronger than even Jack knew, in the darkened hallway right outside Abby's door. Jack had quietly slipped it out of the knife block on the island counter in the kitchen. Just like Sam had instructed, Jack now pushed a toothpick into the hole in the center of Abby's doorknob and gently pressed a little lever that released the lock as he twisted the knob to the right to open the door. He looked down at Sam, who nodded her head. Yes, Jack. That nod made clear, do it. It's time. Jack, wearing socks to mask the noise of his movement, quietly snuck inside his sister's room and walked over to the edge of her bed. Sam followed slowly, careful not to make much noise with her hard plastic shoes. Tears welled up in Jack's eyes as he stared down at his sleeping sibling, drooling ever so slightly onto her pillow. Her long hair, let out of the messy bun she usually wore while she was awake, covered most of the pillow beside her head. Only her head was peeking out from beneath the sheets and comforter that covered the rest of her.
Why? Why did she have to hate him? Why did he have to do this in order to see his dad again? Why couldn't his sister and mom be good?
Jack felt something tap against his left hand that dangled limply along his side. He looked down, and it was the handle of the butcher knife. Sam was tapping him with it. She nodded again, a nod that said, yes, Jack, this is what must be done. And
Were her eyes glowing a bit? He'd never noticed that before. Sam's eyes were glowing, glowing with magical power. She was willing Jack along with her dark sorcery to grab the knife, hold it high above his head, and then plunge it down with everything he had into his defenseless sister's neck. And that was exactly what Jack now set out to do. On his own, he would have never gone through with it. He would have ran back to his bedroom and threw himself down on his bed and bawled his eyes out. Even if his sister did want him dead, he still wouldn't have been able to kill her. But with Sam's help, in a life that felt so much like a dream, he convinced himself that he must still be asleep. None of this was really happening. And he grabbed the knife. Trembling, lip quivering, he held it up high above his head and looked down at his sister's peaceful face. She looked so sweet, like the good sister she'd always been before their father had left them both. And then, right before slamming the knife home, Jack let out a bit of a whimper, barely loud enough to awaken Abby. She opened her eyes just in time to see the knife coming down towards her neck, and she was able to move enough to have the knife miss her throat and lodge instead in the flesh between her neck and shoulder. Ah! Abby screamed as she grabbed her brother's wrists and pushed him back as she pulled to the side, ripping the knife back out of her and spraying her brother with a bit of her blood. That did it. That snapped him out of the spell he was under. Ah! Jack now screamed as well. I'm sorry, Abby! Mom! Abby screamed as she threw the knife across her room. Mom, help! Jack stumbled back towards the wall, reeling in shock over what he'd done. He looked down towards where Sam was, and she was gone. Click, clack, click, clack, click, clack. He followed the sound of what was Sam running, saw her, and watched her pick up the knife and spin around. Sam no longer looked like the sweet little friend she'd been to Jack. Her amber eyes had darkened to a deep shade of crimson and glowed with a ferocity he'd never seen. Her red lips were parted unlike ever before, and he realized he'd never noticed until now if she had teeth or not. She had them. A lot of them. They reminded him of a picture of a row of shark's teeth he'd seen at school. Sam jumped, almost flew from the floor up onto the foot of Abby's bed with a knife in her hand. Abby, watch out! Jack pointed at the little doll he was just beginning to truly meet for the first time. Abby screamed in horror and disbelief as the doll ran across her bed and plunged the knife into her stomach. This is what you wanted, Jack. You wanted Abby to die, remember? And now she's going to. Abby grabbed Sam to try and rip her off of her, but she was far too strong for that. The pain she was feeding on now sent her power to unnatural heights. Jack, help me! Abby screamed for her brother right before Sam bit down on her hand. When she recoiled, Sam pulled the knife back out and plunged it again, up from just below her sternum and straight into her heart. Abby stared first at the living doll that had just killed her, and then at her brother as the light left her eyes and she fell back limp on her bed. His now dead sister still staring at him, Jack leaned back against the wall, frozen, tears streaming down his face.
Why? He sobbed. Why are you doing this?
Sam sneered at him. In my world, Jack, a world your dead father is most certainly not in, pain is what we eat, and yours is delicious. What a special feast this is. Maybe the best I've ever had.
Darlene woke from a deep vodka tonic-fueled slumber to the sound of her daughter's death wails. In her hurry to get out of bed, she got tangled in her sheets and tripped, falling into the dresser. Then when she finally managed to untangle herself and stand, she grabbed the door to open it, but it was locked. How? It locked from the inside, and she never locked her bedroom door. Sam. Her mind flashed on the night. She thought she saw the doll under the dining room table. She had seen her. Abby had seen her as well. She now knew that in her gut with certainty. And with equal certainty, she knew that Sam had somehow locked her door. She unlocked the door as her daughter continued to scream and ran as fast as she could down the hallway. Abby's door was locked as well. Inside Abby's room, Sam was able to use her sorcery to lock the door without having to touch it. Jack now heard his mother trying to get in.
Abby! Abby, unlock the door!
Jack ran to the door while Sam watched, an ecstatic, satisfied smile on her face. He unlocked the door and started to say, Mom, run! As his mother pushed past him to get to Abby. Due to the darkness of the room and the franticness of the moment, she didn't see or hear Sam pulling the knife back out of Abby's chest and sliding down to the floor on the far side of the bed. Darlene rushed over to her daughter, lying still, covered in so much blood.
No, Jack! What happened? She yelled before quickly adding, Grab my phone! Call 911 now! Mom, we have to run! It was Sam! She's still... Ah!
Before Jack could finish, Sam ran the blade across Darlene's Achilles tendon, and she fell to her knees beside the bed. Meanwhile, Sam ran around to the foot of the bed, jumped up, and now came at Darlene's face with a knife. Darlene threw her hand out just in time to deflect the blade that now nearly sliced off the pinky finger of her right hand. She screamed, "Jack, run to the neighbors!" As Sam stabbed her twice more, slicing her left forearm and right palm before Darlene swung her left hand around and slapped Sam off of the bed and into the wall. She knocked the knife loose in the process and went to grab it. Jack still stood frozen against the wall. Everything was happening so fast, he didn't know what to do. Just like he'd stood by and watched his sister be murdered after stabbing her himself, now he was doing the same thing with his mom. "Stop it, Sam! Stop! Leave her alone!" he yelled through tears. As Darlene grabbed the knife, Sam grabbed onto her hand and bit down into her wrist, chewing and ripping quickly like a piranha, tearing open her veins, blood sprayed. And with tendons in her wrist having been shredded apart, Darlene couldn't keep hold of the knife and cried out. She tried to grab Sam with her other wounded hand, but had no strength due to the damage it had already taken. Sam stopped biting, grabbing the knife again, and after sharing a sinister bloody smile, swung it quickly in a wide arc that connected with Darlene's neck and slid it open. Windpipe and carotid artery both sliced clean through. Darlene grabbed for her throat now, unable to breathe or contain the blood rapidly spilling out of her. She spent her final moments on the floor next to her daughter's bed, just below her daughter's dead body, listening to a monster that looked like a child's doll torment her son, who remained standing against the wall, sobbing.
"We did it, Jack. Well, I did it. But you tried. You did start the stabbing, better than nothing. And now Mommy and Sissy are with your dad. Dead. And you'll join them, but not tonight."
Sam continued talking as she walked towards Sam, dropping the knife at his feet. And then, like a creepy little spider, she climbed up his leg and then chest until her face was inches from his own and her crazed eyes stared into his.
"No, you're going to live a long time, sweet boy. And you'll think about this night every hour of every day. And you'll try to tell yourself it was all my doing. But you had a hand in all this too, little Jack. For the chance to see your daddy, you were all too ready to kill your sister and mother. Yes, little Jack, I'm a monster, but so are you. I can live with that, but can you?"
Then as Jack still stood, feet rooted to the floor, wide-eyed, nearly hyperventilating, paralyzed with fear, Sam kissed him on the cheek and spoke sweetly one last time, as she had always done before.
"It's been so fun to play with you, sweet boy. But now it's my time to be going. I'll see you again in your dreams, Jack. Hopefully every night. For the rest of your miserable life."
And with that, Sam jumped down and walked out of the room. The click-clack, click-clack of her feet faded into the distance, the sound soon replaced with the howl of sirens. A neighbor, hearing all the screaming, had called the police. When officers showed up, a bloody 10-year-old boy answered the door and managed to say, "She killed them both," before breaking down into incoherent sobs. Officers found the dead bodies of Darlene and Abby Stevenson in one of the bedrooms, along with the murder weapon that had Jack's fingerprints all over it. Jack would be convicted of both of their murders, even though some of the autopsy findings were atypical. Darlene's wrist had been chewed on. Abby's right hand also had what seemed to be a strange bite mark on it. And a small trail of blood led from the bedroom to the bathroom, a trail that looked like it had come from some impossibly tiny person, someone the size of a doll, walking into the bathroom to clean themselves up. Since those details didn't point to any other possible human killer, and thanks to Jack admitting that yes, he had stabbed Abby the first time because the doll that no one could now find had tricked him, hypnotized him somehow, those details weren't enough for his defense attorneys to avoid a conviction. Jack would be sent to a lockdown psychiatric facility, where he would remain until at least the age of 18, if not for the rest of his life. It all depended on how he responded to treatment. It depended a lot on if he would ever take responsibility for what he had done, or if he would continue to stick with his story about Sam tricking him into killing his mother and sister. Following leaving Abby's room that night, Sam had walked into the bathroom to clean herself up, while she continued to listen to Jack cry. She didn't want her bloody footprints to lead anyone to her special hiding place. With no one watching, Sam had walked into Darlene's room and then into her closet. The back wall of her closet was fake. Behind it
was a secret room. A room built by a terrible man many, many years ago. A child killer obsessed with the occult. This killer never caught by the police, thanks to Sam being conjured and killing him herself. Had once kept children in this room and had done terrible, terrible things to them. He also had, through his evil deeds and rituals, turned a mirror in that room into a portal, a door that connected this world to a terrible other world of pain and darkness. Above the mirror were some symbols written in blood. One of them matched the black symbol inside the circular gold pendant that hung down over Sam's chest. Sam, whose real name was Saemon. And Saemon now stepped through this mirror, leaving Earth behind and returning with her belly now full, to Murkir Haymur, the dark world she had been born into. She stepped into a deep, wet tunnel made from both stones and bones, a tunnel full of strange symbols that looked similar to the one in her pendant, runes carved into its walls. In this world, Saemon was no little doll. She was a monstrous and powerful dark sorceress, an evil, demonic-looking creature that, every few decades, fed on the pain of children, like you and I would feed on bread. The more pain, the better. If investigators had dug deeper, they would have seen that, 30 years earlier, in the same house, a 5-year-old boy was found in the same room as his murdered parents, a 5-year-old who also told officers that his doll did it. And 28 years before that, twin 14-year-old boys and their single father had also been killed. The only survivor, an 8-year-old girl, who, like the 5-year-old boy, and like Jack, blamed the murders on a doll. Neither of them had been pushed quite as far as Jack, and neither had helped with the killings. The first two victims, both also, in time and through therapy, were pushed to come to the conclusion that they'd only imagined the doll doing it, because the truth was somehow even worse and harder to accept. 25 to 30 years from now, Saemon will have grown hungry enough to return again from Murkir Haymur to feed once more. She can be stopped. She can be killed. But will the next child be strong enough to resist her charms? Will someone finally intervene to end her game forever? Hopefully, you and your children, if you have them, won't be the unfortunate souls this nasty little monster finds next. And that's it for this edition of Nightmare Fuel. I hope you loved or were horrified by today's tale of sometimes the darkness wins. I do realize that you might have hated it. Pretty brutal ending, right? But if you knew that in the end, the monsters were always defeated, how scary would any of these stories really be? Today's tale was written by me, Dan Cummins, and scored by Logan Keith. If you enjoyed this story, check out the rest of the Bad Magic Productions catalog. Time Suck every Monday at noon Pacific time, with little short sucks on some Fridays, and these Nightmare Fuel episodes on some Fridays as well. And new episodes of the long-running paranormal podcast, Scared to Death, every Tuesday at midnight. Please go to badmagicproductions.com for all your Bad Magic needs, including show-related merch, and stay scared.
Bad Magic Productions.